Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. IKEA moves forward. Hi, friends. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. Today is May the 8th, and we are on our People article for the month, and we will be talking about the new CEO of Swedish furniture giant IKEA. And in the studio with me is Simon. Simon, welcome to the program.
Hi, everybody. It's good to be here.
Simon, it's great to have you. Well, today we are talking about a company most of us are familiar with because perhaps we have shopped in its stores, we have eaten its wonderful Swedish meatballs, perhaps the ice cream. Simon, are you a consumer of IKEA products?
I am from time to time, and I have been for many years. I gotta say first, though, you know, you have been pronouncing this company with the classic Canadian pronunciation. That's the pronunciation I use, but I was greatly shocked when I arrived on the island and heard people say IKEA instead of IKEA.
So what's the proper pronunciation, Simon? Let's correct it once and for all.
This is one of those things, like if you are in Canada and you're saying IKEA, people are going to look at you like you have two heads, which I should note is an English idiom. Having two heads, looking at someone like they have two heads means you look at someone like they're very strange. So people will think you are very strange if you say IKEA, but I have it on good authority, which means I have been told by a reliable source that the company itself pronounces it IKEA.
Okay.
So the local pronunciation here, I guess, is technically right, but I mean, we're a panel of Canadians here.
Yes, we're all Canadian team today. So friends, we're going to say IKEA, but if you say IKEA, it's also okay. Simon, I was just thinking, like in English, IKEA sounds like the word icky.
I think that's, honestly, I think that's why Canadians avoid it, because icky means gross.
What does icky mean? I-C-K-Y.
Yeah, it means gross.
It means gross.
But you know, this is not an English word.
Yes. So we are translating from Sweden, right? This is a Swedish word.
I can never remember which of the Scandinavian countries
they're Swedish.
From. But
you
blue and yellow,
you can actually
tell
from the flag because the Swedish flag is blue and yellow. And IKEA is so proudly Swedish. Everywhere in the store, you see the colors blue and yellow. And that's their logo, the company colors. They're proudly Swedish.
So you asked me what I think about when I shop there, right?
Yes.
Was that what you asked me?
That was the original question.
Before we started this discussion on pronunciation?
Yes.
Well, I mean, we had to have that discussion because otherwise we will be confused. And everyone else will be too. So now that we're all clear, what does it make me think of? It's made me think of different things at different times in my life. Like it has kind of a unique IKEA style. And I will admit to finding that fairly attractive. I like very simple kind of things. Mm-hmm. But now I associate it more with like temporary furniture.
Yes.
Especially if you buy furniture. Because pine, which is the main wood they use, does not last permanently.
Yes.
So if you buy a chair, it's going to be inexpensive, but it's also going to be broken in a year or two.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that, I think, is a pretty conventional Canadian view. Like, who buys it in Canada? College students.
Young people.
Yeah, and people who are moving.
Yes.
And need to furnish their house nicely, quickly.
Yes. I think of a big market for IKEA in Canada are people in their 20s. Like you said,
college. That's not true everywhere, right?
College students and recent graduates. And then as an adult, I think perhaps sometimes we just buy furniture. Like if we want furniture that doesn't need to last.
Yeah.
You know, maybe for the office, for example.
Yeah.
Because like for the office, like it might not need to last, right? Maybe
the other place,
2 years, it's fine.
I have found IKEA furniture handy is when you need to furnish like a space quickly.
Yes.
Like you need a whole bunch of different kinds of stuff.
Right.
Because, you know, in Canada, if you go shopping for like a sofa, there are basically furniture stores that have like sofas. Yeah, just all sofas.
Yes.
Whereas IKEA, you can get, oh, look, I switched. IKEA, you can get, lamps, tables, sofas, chairs, bookcases, like everything you need all in one stop.
Yes.
So it's very convenient.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It is very convenient. So usually when we think of IKEA or IKEA, we think of fast, functional,
yeah,
low cost.
It's kind of the fast fashion version of furniture.
It's kind of like Zara.
Yeah.
The Zara of furniture.
H&M.
H&M. Okay.
H&M
would be even a better description, yeah, because H&M is even cheaper than Zara. That's a really good point.
You know, so it's pretty good quality. It's very convenient.
For that price point.
They've got that whole you can put it together yourself thing.
Yeah.
Completely so it's kinda,
DIY.
You know,
yeah.
It's nice stuff.
Well, friends, let's get into the first reading of this article where we will talk about IKEA's new CEO and the direction he wants to take the company.
The new face of IKEA's global vision. The company's CEO says his goal is long-term resilience. IKEA's newest CEO, Juvencio Maestu, is calling to tell me about the Inca Group's latest earnings. That's the parent company behind IKEA. As it turns out, there are worse fates than a company making a little less money than it did last year. An economist by training, Maestu has worked at the company for more than 25 years and brings a powerful international perspective to the position, having started as a store manager in Madrid before eventually taking over as CEO of IKEA India. We spoke about the release of Inca's 2025 financial earnings, which Maestu characterizes as mostly flat. Revenue is down 0.9% as the company fights inflation to keep prices low. On the brighter side, store traffic was up 1.3%, online sales were up 4.6%, and overall item sales grew 1.6%. Below, Maestu details his biggest priorities for the company while addressing the challenges of operating a budget-friendly furniture business in a volatile global economy.
Well, Simon, it looks like IKEA has a new CEO. And just tell me a little bit about what he is inheriting, the company he has inherited. Well, inherited is really not the right word here, but it's the company that the responsibility has fallen on his shoulders.
Yeah. To be honest, this section is not super clear to me in terms of where it is going.
Yeah.
Usually our articles are kind of more telling a story or something,
mm-hmm,
and I have no idea what the story is going to be here. Essentially, what it looks like is there's a couple of themes. One is international. So the idea is this guy has been brought on, I guess it was originally from Spain, right? Madrid?
Yes.
And then he sort of started with the organization there, and now he's in charge of India, or he went on to being in charge of IKEA in India.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's sort of this international growth trend within the organization. The other trend, though, is that what you would normally think in business, which is that constant growth is the way to go. You want every quarter to be better than the last quarter,
mm-hmm,
because then you're sort of, what's the term they use? Developing shareholder value. You're benefiting your shareholders, right? But that apparently is not happening at IKEA. And there's an argument here that that's not such a bad thing.
Yes.
So essentially you have some sort of economic chaos in that they have broken the normal business model, but they're also going international.
Okay. Maybe we have to emphasize they are extremely international now, but they just want to accelerate their rate of growth. And when we talk about growth here, I'm guessing they want bigger market share. They want a bigger market share in all the countries they are operating. But we will get into that in a little bit. But first, so we start off this article, basically the author, Mark Wilson, he's interviewing the CEO. The
mm-hmm.
CEO is telling him they just had a earnings report. And Simon, what is when you release your earnings, it looks like they just released their 2000 2025 financial earnings. Like, mm-hmm. so this is like the yearly annual report, right? The financial report.
It could be quarterly, you know, the latest one they happen throughout the year. So a quarterly, when we say quarterly, it mm-hmm. means a quarter of a year. So every 3 months, they're sort of reporting on how the company is doing. Think of it as like a report about the financial health of the business. Those things are mostly directed at people who are shareholders. So they're people who have bought stock in the company or are looking at the company for some sort of financial reason. Maybe they're lending money to the company or they have some sort of interest in knowing how the business is doing. So they've clearly released an earnings report. And it's not what you might have expected from a healthy company. But the CEO is arguing that that isn't such a big deal. The phrase they use specifically is, there are worse fates than, and that's sort of the saying, a company making a little less money than it did last year. So
well,
worse fates
than. I kind of got to say, though, in this economic climate we are in right now, in 2026, there is so much volatility in the global economy. And we will talk about volatile in a little bit, but volatile just means a situation where change can happen very fast and without warning. So things can get bad really fast. It's volatile. We've been in a very volatile global economy for a couple years now. So at least for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that phrase, though, there are worse fates than, is that you, when you use that, you are acknowledging that what has happened is bad.
Yes.
But you are suggesting that it is not as bad as it could have been.
Yes.
Worse things could have happened. So you're sort of defending the situation as being better than it might have been.
Yes, and this is expected. He is a CEO of a company, and they have just released their financial earnings. It looks like this is a yearly financial earnings because we'll look later about the release of Inca. Inca is basically the IKEA is the
brand. They call
brand.
It the parent company
yes,
here,
but
I think.
The parent company, yes, is the Inca Group. This is a private company. Mm-hmm. It's a private company. This private company, they released their 2025 financial earnings. So the CEO is defending, like you said, he's defending these earnings report and saying it could have been a lot worse.
That's right.
It's not that bad. How do you say his name?
Oh, no.
This is a Spanish name. We're just going to do
like
our
best. It was
like Mestu.
Yeah, I thought it was Mastu.
Yes.
But,
like Mastu, yeah. Mestu. Well, we'll just call him
just sorry.
IKEA CEO.
Just sorry for getting your name wrong.
Yes, I'm so sorry. We need to learn Spanish, Simon. We got to work harder.
Our best efforts.
Yes. So Mestu, let's just say Mestu for now. He's an economist by training, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's very experienced. We talked about his international experience. He's been with IKEA for 25 years, first starting in Spain and then going on to manage IKEA India and now IKEA Global. And then let's talk about IKEA's financial report for 2025. So what is his description of this financial report?
Well, they said he characterized it, which basically means he described it. You know, when you characterize someone, you're describing their characteristics, right? Like, oh, kind, outgoing, generous. In this case, he says the report is mostly flat. And so that's kind of a description of like a graph that you might draw to illustrate what's going on financially. If it's flat, it means it's not really going up, not really going down. And when you say mostly flat, and then you look at the numbers that follow there, what it means is some things are kind of going down, other things are going up, so it averages out to about the same. So for example, we're told revenue is down, meaning the amount of money they have earned from sales is down. Why? Well, the company is fighting inflation to keep prices low. So basically, the price of IKEA stuff is going up a little bit. But they're doing what they can to keep it low, and that's sort of affecting sales. So what might they be doing? They might be, I don't know, lowering the quality of material or, you know, less variety. Who knows? Anyway, whatever it is, there's been some effect, you know, 0.9% on overall revenue.
That's not really too bad, though. It's just less than 1% drop. It's not great. We never wish for drops, but if you're going to drop, dropping by 1% is not that bad.
Mm-hmm.
But on the bright side, some things went up.
Yeah. Store traffic, which means the number of people walking around the stores. I don't know if that's all good, though. I know in some parts of the world, IKEA is famous for basically having people sleeping in its beds and lying around all day and just sort of using the free air conditioning, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, but in general, I suppose people are not going to buy things if they're not in the store or on the website. And the website is the second one there, where sales are up, you know, notably. Almost 5%, 4.6%.
Yes. And then what is his priorities? Because we'll be talking about this today and tomorrow. What is his priorities? Like he's facing the challenge of operating a budget-friendly furniture business in a volatile global economy. Okay, let's break this down.
Well, he hasn't actually described his priorities yet. That's in our next reading.
We will talk about that very soon. But the goal here is very simple. He wants a budget-friendly furniture business. So he needs to keep the prices low. Because if you have low prices, then it's friendly on your budget. You can also, you can say wallet-friendly. It's friendly on your wallet. Mm-hmm. You're not spending as much as you might in other places. And description of the global economy is important. It's volatile. So volatile, we talk about a situation where something changes very fast. We could say a volatile economy. We can say a volatile temper?
Yeah,
somebody is very volatile. Mm-hmm. Like, those are the people I don't like working with. I find that kind of scary. It's like one minute they're great and the next minute they're super emotional.
Moody.
Yeah. Yeah. So here, like basically a volatile global economy, you can almost say it's a moody global economy. Our economy can change suddenly and very fast. So this is the state of the current world. And let's go into our second reading where we're going to start to learn about this CEO's observations and what is he going to do about it from the observations he's seen.
What is the focus for IKEA? I have been traveling around many countries to learn about the reality from the shop floor and talking with customers, colleagues, and coworkers. That has cemented three things that are important to our vision of caring for people and the planet. First, I will keep putting a lot of focus on growth, not only in mature markets or European-based growth, but many markets, US included, and India and China. Growth is a way to be more present in homes. The second thing is to double down on the need for cost transformation, because the best frame of low price is low cost. You cannot be a low-price company if you are not a low-cost company. And I will double down on the resilience of the company. Third is simplicity. Normally, big companies like us start to be bureaucratic. And from the leadership perspective, we have to learn how to lead the company in a more agile way. Less layers and more agility in the decision-making.
Well, Simon, here it says that he's traveled to many countries. And then he's traveled to many countries. He's visited a lot of the IKEA stores. And here he's trying to learn the reality from the shop floor. So when we say the shop floor, what does that mean? It just means the store,
means
right?
The workplace.
The
store in this case, or, you know, the back room where they store stuff.
Yes. And he's talked a lot with the customers here, the consumers, colleagues, and coworkers. And here it says that it has cemented three things that are important to their vision. And what is cemented? I think of cement. I think of building stuff. I think of cement, like, you know, that's that thing that holds things together when you're building.
Yeah, but it's hard and fairly permanent and inflexible. So the idea is it's kind of made his ideas about what is happening like cement. So he's seen a lot of evidence in it, and now he believes very firmly in this viewpoint. And so it's not going to change anytime soon.
Well, let's look at these three things that he says that are cemented, like have been cemented in his head of their vision. So the first one is a focus on growth.
Yeah.
Right. And here it doesn't really specify exactly what kind of growth we're talking about. Are we talking about market share growth? Are we talking about growth in sales? Like, what exactly are we talking about when we're talking about growth? But here he wants growth not just in mature markets or European markets, but he wants growth worldwide, right?
Yeah, mature markets are markets where your products have been available for a long time, so people are very familiar. Like, you have a secure portion of the market, basically.
Yes, because like you've been in there for many years. You have brand recognition. But he also wants to grow in perhaps newer markets. And then not just the U.S. here, it says it specifies India and China, because India and China, just between the two of them, we already have over 2 billion people.
Yeah.
Right. So that is a huge portion of the world population, over 2 billion people, plus the U.S., another 300-something million. So he wants growth in all these markets. And then he goes on to say growth is a way to be more present in homes. So they want their products in everybody's homes.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, how about the second thing? Well, what is the second thing that he's very convinced of?
Well, they want to double down, which means effectively they have already done this, but they want to renew and increase their efforts to do it. So put in double the effort to achieve this thing. And that is the need for cost transformation. Now, what would you say cost transformation is?
Well,
that's one of those business terms that could mean any one of a thousand things, right?
Exactly. It could mean anything. But cost transformation just means that you have to change the structure of the cost.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, perhaps in the past, the cost of making this chair, because IKEA is a furniture company, the cost of making this chair, maybe 50% was maybe not, okay, 50%, 60% was just the raw material cost.
Okay, I think the problem here, well, basically, I mean, the thing that any of our advanced listeners will pick up here is cost is like the price that is paid for the thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Transformation means change.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the catch here is they're not talking about the cost to us as consumers.
No, their cost.
They're talking about their cost of producing the thing. So they want to change the way in which they are producing things so that they can have lower prices.
Yes.
For people. So lower cost to produce the items means they can pass on those savings and make them available for lower costs.
Yes. So, I mean, you're right.
They sort of say that in the next line, right?
Yeah, you're right. Like, it says that you cannot be a low-price company if you are not a low-cost company.
Yeah.
So basically, because IKEA's main... Like, well, they have more than one competitive advantage, but it's if you can only choose one, we would say that their competitive advantage is low cost.
It's ironic they say that, though, because when you say like low cost, it means different things to different people in different countries.
Right.
You know, it kind of depends on what your income level is or what your budget is. Because, I mean, if you wander around many places in the world, you know, you're going to go into a restaurant and you're going to see sort of cheap tables with those plastic stools to sit on. And, you know, it doesn't really matter because the whole point of being there is not to like lay back and relax. It's to like eat your food and move on so somebody else can come in and eat the food, right?
Right.
Like they're high turnover food serving businesses, right? So basically then though, in many places, there's a comfort with furniture that is substantially cheaper than IKEA. Whereas if you go into a North American diner, you're going to see IKEA-style chairs that are kind of like wobbling around from heavy use and mm-hmm. things like that. Mm-hmm. So North Americans would view IKEA as the cheapest of the cheap acceptable
right.
options.
Right.
And I assume that is also true for Europeans. But if you head to most markets in the world, it's actually going to be like mid-range or... you know, kind of more expensive than it definitely would be in the eyes of those more mature markets. So,
yes, especially in the newer markets, like the developing countries, as we would say.
Yeah, but I suppose either way you look at it, if they can keep their prices lower, they're more accessible to more people in the market,
yes.
Whatever the price point is.
Whatever the price point. And I'm sure that IKEA has differential pricing. Differential just means that you have different prices in different markets. I'm pretty sure they have differential pricing. But you're right. That's a very good point. What is low cost in one country might be not low cost in another country. And then we'll be talking a bit more tomorrow about the resilience, building resilience in the company. We'll talk about that a little more tomorrow. But let's get to our third point. The third thing that has been submitted cemented in his head is simplicity. I find it interesting that we use the word simplicity here. I think another word I would use here instead of simplicity just means being simple. I would use be more lean. Do you think lean is a good word here? Because here he says that big companies often become very bureaucratic, but he hopes the company can be more agile. Simon, can you break that down a little bit? Bureaucratic versus agile.
Yeah, I would actually start with the simplicity there because I think they're using that word, the writer is using that word intentionally to draw a contrast because IKEA's style of furniture is usually described as simple.
Yes.
Right? Like very basic.
Visual-wise.
It's got a simplicity to it. And so it's ironic then that as the company has become bigger, things in the company have become less simple. They've become more bureaucratic, which basically means more red tape and more layers of administration and things like that.
And that's usually what happens when companies grow. Like when you have more layers, like there's more hierarchy. There's a lot of levels you have to go up.
Yeah, that's right. But it's kind of ironic given they're famous for
being simple.
Yeah. So I think he's sort of emphasizing a need to return to their original style of doing things, not just the style of furniture, but this idea of being agile, which basically means flexible. If a person is agile, it means they can move quickly, not running straight, but sort of from side to side, like a basketball player moving their way up the court. So basically, they want the company to be flexible rather than inflexible and tied up in red tape.
Yes, and that's probably a good goal, right? Because things are changing so fast. We talked about how the economy has been very volatile for a couple years now, and you do need to stay agile if you want to stay ahead. Well, friends, we are at the end of today's portion, but please come back tomorrow. We still have a lot to talk about IKEA plans on moving forward. I'm Rebecca.
I'm Simon.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.